A second, but we found it. Of course, this is you can find this pinned at the top of my X account. It is the Eighth Front War documentary with a bunch of these characters saying out loud what they intend to do. So we'll go to it. It's about 4 minutes and 30 seconds into the video. And first you'll see Benjamin Netanyahu, and then you'll see Adam Milstein, the director, the head, the president of the Canary Mission, describing his plan to create a massive interconnected network of these groups to silence anybody who opposes them. Lovely Americans, aren't they? Let's watch.
Defense and have moved to offense.
The weapons change over time. You can't fight today with the swords. That doesn't work very well.
But we need the kind of genius that manufactured Apollo gold pagers and infiltrated Hezbollah for over a decade to prepare for this battle.
Well, we have to fight with the weapons that apply to the battlefields in which we're engaged. And the most important ones are social media.
Because the next war will be decided based on how Israel and its allies perform online as much as offline.
This is the Eighth Front, the disinformation campaign.
It is actually this Eighth Front where our enemies believe they can actually defeat the Jewish state.
This is the kind of ingenuity and inventiveness that have always been a hallmark of the state of Israel, that have always been a characteristic of the Jewish people. I know we can do it.
A lot of this is done with money.
Invested billions and billions of dollars in the information battlefield.
Money of NGOs, vast. Money of governments, vaster.
We prohibit harmful stereotypes about Jewish people, such as claims that Jews control financial, political, or media institutions.
You're damn right we're going to cancel them and deplatform them.
We monitor them online, social media, messaging apps, video games, cryptocurrency.
Hitler admirers, Stalin admirers, Jew haters.
Podcasts, short-form video, Wikipedia, LLM.
American haters, Churchill haters.
We monitor these people and we share the intelligence with the FBI.
You think you're stupid little podcast is going to change the world like hell it is.
Social media, this is the new battlefield.
You don't get to wrap your psychotic, mental, unhinged Nazi.
We do not allow Holocaust denial and distortion.
And the most important purchase that is going on right now is
TikTok.
TikTok. TikTok, number one.
For every 30 minutes that someone watches TikTok, they become 17% more anti-Semitic.
So you have TikTok just smashing our young people's brains all day long with video of carnage in Gaza.
So we really have a TikTok problem.
Because anything that we try to say to them, they are hearing it through this wall of carnage, and I sound obscene.
Anti-Zionism. It's just Jew hatred.
We made a change.
We updated our policies
to designate the use of the term Zionist.
To recognize that the term Zionist
as a proxy for a protected attribute
can be used as a proxy for Jews and Israelis
as hate speech.
Why can't Israel be doing some sort of, counterintelligence?
Right now, the ADL is co-writing Sunday school curriculum.
Information warfare like this.
It's building the technology to train the LLMs more effectively.
Like a psychological operations. In America.
As part of a robust framework to combat anti-Semitism, we have industry-leading policies designed with the safety of the Jewish community in mind.
You're right. We control the media. So what are you going to do about it? Are you going to bitch on Twitter? Like, okay. Meanwhile, we're going to control more of the media.
And working with OpenAI, with Alphabet, with Anthropic, with Meta, with Microsoft, we are working with them now to train the LLMs.
We also have, I think, over two dozen Jewish organizations that are constantly feeding us intelligence and information.
So number one, we measure and track. Number two, we monitor and disrupt. We have a whole apparatus. I have 40 analysts working full-time, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, monitoring extremists.
Monitoring campuses, digital networks, activist groups, and public officials.
We have several PhDs on staff. We have a network of academics and scholars we work with around the country.
I've talked to the leaders of AI in the world, and
I'm holding in my hands two compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine, nobody else has it. It's next level. And ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These two products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. Iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at DalsonStore.com. The very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlchemistStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at TheAlchemistStore.com.
Have you ever been experienced? Well, we have. Let us show you now on The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room, final hour for this Friday broadcast. And I'm very happy to be joined by Tiffany Cianci. She is an activist raising awareness about the critical threat that private equity poses to American society. She's raising the alarm and putting pressure on private equity firms that are covertly monopolizing entire industries by using hostile takeovers and kangaroo courts. You can learn how to fight back by following her on X at The Vino Mom. That's The Vino Mom on X. And you can go to TiffanyCianci.com. But actually, you're here today as a sort of call to action. Massive protest on Monday. Tell me if I'm wrong. MAHA to protest outside Supreme Court over the Roundup case. I think this is a very important case to be focusing on and concerned with and to let people know about. Tiffany, thank you for coming on the show.
Always glad to be here. You're my favorite show to come on. You know that. So well, I'm always going to come.
It's always fun having you, the bubbly fairy of doom. But you're not a fairy of doom. You're a fairy of hope today because you're standing up against what's happening at the Supreme Court. Tell us about the Make America Healthy Again rally on Monday in front of the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C.
So today is absolutely, it's a fight back episode. You know, one of my favorite journalists of all time was David Horowitz. I don't know if you're familiar with his work from the 80s and 90s,
yep.
But he was the fight back guy who would go out and take his camera crew and be running, chasing millionaire CEOs that were hurting people in America. And he would demand change and he would get reform for Americans, which is a big part of what I try to do. And today is definitely a fight back episode. I'm here to talk about a few things we can do to fight back about big issues. And first up is definitely MAHA. So right now what we have is Bayer Monsanto. Bayer Monsanto has spent, now, I like to say Bayer Monsanto is a German company.
Right.
They're not an American company. Okay. This is a German company that is based out of Germany, that employs more people in Germany, but makes most of their money here in America.
Yep.
And they do it poisoning American farmers and American children, and then making money on the opposite side on the cancer drugs they sell us to treat the illnesses they give us. And Bayer Monsanto has spent tens of millions of dollars in the last year and a half to buy off most of the politicians in Congress and the entire administration. And they've done so because over the last 10 years, they have paid out more than $10 billion in settlements for giving farmers and children non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and leukemia with their products. And right now they have been fighting for this moment, this exact moment, and they are counting on one of their four different pronged approaches to work to grant them pesticide immunity, to say that we're no longer allowed to sue them when they kill Americans that feed the nation, that they kill Americans that are just coming into this world, that we need those farmers to feed for the next generation, to become the next generation of farmers. And so right now we are protesting that, and we're going to be at the Supreme Court, not just protesting the arguments that are being made inside where the Trump administration, at the behest of Bayer Monsanto and led entirely by Susie Wiles, and when she was still employed, Pam Bondi, who both worked for Bayer Monsanto just before they were lobbyists for Bayer Monsanto, just before they joined his administration. They led the effort to get him to have the Solicitor General file the amicus brief asking the Attorney General to grant Bayer Monsanto immunity for pesticide relief so that nobody can sue them. And that is one of the four ways that they are seeking it. And they mean to get it through this year in America, come hell or high water, frankly. And we mean to stop them at every single attempt.
Well, I love to see it. And again, it's this Monday outside the Supreme Court, April 27th, this Monday. What else do people know? Because I want people there. I want our audience there. If you're in the area, go show your support. This is something it's not doesn't have a lot of support from celebrities. It's not a big flashy thing. But this is the thing they're distracting you from, right? Everybody thinks everything's a distraction. You'll notice not a lot of people are talking about this. They want this to just quietly pass. They don't want a big hubbub. It's up to us to make the hubbub. We got to make the noise. So just first and foremost, what do people know need to know about how to get involved in this protest in particular on Monday, the 27th of April?
The most important thing you need to know is that a lot of people think when it's the Supreme Court that what we say doesn't matter, that they're going to rule the way that they rule. And that is partially true. Knowing that the public is paying attention to what's going on at the Supreme Court does have a certain amount of influence. But I also want everybody to understand that this Supreme Court case is being used to distract us from what they're doing across the street in the Capitol building on Monday and Tuesday as well. And that's because while everyone's eyes are on the Supreme Court across the street, we're not just going to be protesting there. We're also going to be turning our attention to Capitol Hill. And the reason we're looking at the Capitol building is because they just recalled the House of Representatives to try to quietly sneak through the farm bill on Tuesday morning while we're all watching the Supreme Court. And what did they sneak into the farm bill? Well, they snuck in horrifying provisions, first of which is obviously pesticide immunity. They've tried in the appropriations bill in the Senate this year. We defeated it. They tried in the appropriations bill in the House. We defeated it. So naturally, they snuck it into the farm bill that's supposed to support American farmers. So naturally, we're going to stop them from getting justice, you know, when they're killed by the company they're forced to do business with by government subsidies and payback kickback schemes. Yeah. Like, it's terrible. And so we need to pay attention to both. This is not just a protest at the Supreme Court. This is a protest to make our voices heard. And we're going to make sure all day long, as we call Capitol Hill, as we're calling the House of Representatives, as we're calling the Senate, we're going to be saying vote no on this farm bill, no to pesticide immunity, and somebody needs to co-sponsor the Pesticide Injury Accountability Act. Those are our three big goals, because we're not okay with poisoning our children. We are not okay with a toxic food supply system. We are not okay with poisoning the farmers that feed this nation.
Absolutely. And I can't help but wonder if, you know, the Trump administration isn't feeling some pressure from their very low poll numbers, their totally collapsing support. This seems like it'd be one place where they could really claw back a lot of that support. I mean, this would be a very easy thing for them to do in order to get a lot of people that right now are off the Trump train, at least not actively working against them. And I mean, this is recognized from this article about the MAHA protest. You know, it calls basically what's going on with glyphosate a betrayal by Robert F. Kennedy. They say support for the executive order, this executive order to boost domestic manufacturing of glyphosate, the support by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who as an environmental lawyer litigated against Monsanto, was widely seen by advocates as a betrayal of the MAHA movement's core values. So I do think that showing widespread big support for or big opposition to, you know, the way that this is going, that could have an effect, because Trump cannot afford to be losing the amount of support that he's losing right now. And this is a very big one, and it's ridiculous, and it's totally unjustifiable. But Trump has been the driver of this, as this notes. It basically says the Trump administration made this an issue. If they had just sat back and let Bayer fight its own fights, they wouldn't have been involved in this situation right now. So the Trump administration is not sort of like having being forced by Bayer Monsanto to get involved. They're active. They're out front. They're actually doing this by choice. This is the part that is so nonsensical when you look at the poll numbers, and it's just crazy. But explain that a little bit, that the Trump administration has been pushing this. They're not victims of Bayer Monsanto here. They're in the driver's seat.
Yeah, this was not an accident. Bayer Monsanto has been laying like this foundation for years. This has been years in the making. They've invested literally tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars into this push. Now, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the episode, just before Susie Wiles joined the Trump administration, she was working at a lobbying group called Ballard Partners. Ballard Partners is the largest lobbying firm that works on behalf of Bayer Monsanto and Pfizer. And their largest lobbyists to the administration on behalf of Bayer and Pfizer were Susie Wiles, Trump's chief of staff, and Pam Bondi. Yep. Okay. And with the help of Benjamin Netanyahu. Again, she was his campaign manager in 2020. And Bayer Monsanto, they pushed to have Susie Wiles appointed as chief of staff. He has 19 officials in his administration that were hand-selected by Bayer and Pfizer to ensure that we were doing what was right for these monopolies and never what's right for the American people. As soon as he took MAHA onto his ticket, they moved in and created walls around him to ensure that it would never go into effect. And at this point, we're seeing the weakness of that promise. He rented these voters. He has made no efforts to show them he bought them wholesale. He literally has taken so many steps to disenfranchise and dissociate from the MAHA voters that delivered him the victory he received. And right now, it's given the Democrats this massive opening. And I'm going to be clear. If you tell me you're not poisoning my kids, that's good. I want to hear that in the election cycle. People want to know.
Yeah, and just like all this stuff, they're just giving these easy victories to the Democrats who go, oh, you're leaving this on the ground? Thank you very much. Yeah, we'll oppose the Iran war, we'll oppose the glyphosate, and we'll just, you know, win off of that. Even if they don't even believe it, it's like, of course they're going to take the opportunity to run on this. And this is, you know, it points out, this is a bipartisan effort. MAHA is a bipartisan movement. There's the crunchy hippie moms on the left. There's the, you know, workout boys on the right. I mean, this is a truly bipartisan movement, which means you could be getting bipartisan support. Instead, you're getting bipartisan condemnation. Like, this is just, it's so stupid the way that Trump is handling this. And I have to think that it's because he actually agrees with what Monsanto and Bayer are doing. And they think it's more valuable to get this done than to get the support that they would for not getting it done. So Representative Thomas Massie is going to be speaking there. Representative Chelly Pingtree is going to be there. They're listed as the featured speakers of the event alongside representatives from a variety of advocacy groups, including Moms Across America, the Center for Food Safety, and the anti-vaccine group Children's Health Defense. So again, a good swath, a good, you know, bipartisan showing here with people on both sides coming out and saying, we don't care what party you're in, somebody's got to stop this. And the Trump administration is forcing this down everybody's throat. So a couple of big speakers there. Are you going to be speaking at the event as well?
So I'm actually going to be running a documentary team because we're working on a documentary about this right now with two really large YouTube channels. And I'm going to be interviewing Cory Booker. He has just confirmed that he's going to be speaking there. All of my followers, all my viewers, you guys can come. I will be there. I'll be cheering from the very front row. I'm going to be interviewing all of the speakers as they're leaving the stage. We are hoping that Rep Luna is going to come across the street and Ro Khanna as well. But I will be also interviewing Cory Booker live, and I'll be releasing those videos on Monday because we are pushing to pass his Pesticide Injury Accountability Act. It is the single piece of legislation that stops all of the efforts by Bayer Monsanto nationwide. Because right now, they're not just pushing it through executive order, which Trump has already handed them on a silver platter. They're not just pushing it to the Supreme Court, which he is trying to hand them on a silver platter. They're not just sneaking it into House and Senate legislation. They're also doing this by paying off state legislatures and working through what's called the Modern Ag Alliance, which sounds really pro-farmer, but is funded by billionaires, all from international companies, to force it through in the states. And right now, North Dakota, Georgia, and Kentucky have all turned their backs on their farmers and granted pesticide immunity at the state level, right? Wyoming just beat it back, though. Wyoming just defeated the same effort. Kentucky, you want to talk about mistakes by Republicans? Kentucky's governor vetoed it. He vetoed it. And the Republican supermajority, down a straight party line, overrode his veto and delivered pesticide immunity.
Right.
In Kentucky.
Right.
They just did it 2 weeks ago. But right now, if we pass Cory Booker's bill, the Pesticide Injury Accountability Act, that grants a private right of action in federal court. That means that a farmer in North Dakota that's been now disenfranchised by this decision, right? A farmer in the Carolinas, a farmer, that's where they're trying to do it right now, in Georgia or Kentucky, that's already lost their ability to seek damages if they've been injured or if their family loses their father, their mother, their son, their daughter, right? They would get to bring that case to federal court and they would have that opportunity again.
And again, you know, no one's ever going to accuse me of being a big fan of Cory Booker, but I love that. I love that. I'm not going to crap on that. I'm going to support him for that. Good for him. And thank you, Cory Booker. Like, you know, I'm not some crazy partisan. I want results and I want American people to be protected as I would think most people do. And again, just looking at the political side of this, we've got this again from the same article. 7 in 10 women polled support limiting pesticide use. More than half of the women in the poll said the Trump administration had not done enough to follow through on its promise to make the public healthier. Again, like, what is the downside here? You make people healthier. You get support from both sides of the aisle. You give a black eye to the, you know, big multinational, international corporations that are destroying this country. And so it just, you know, to me, it's just, it's the capstone. It's another example, but a really visceral example of the way Trump is abandoning his core promises and doing it in ways that he's not being forced to. He seems to be choosing to do this. It's very upsetting. So what do y'all hope the goal is by going out on Monday to do this protest? What are you hoping to achieve? What message are you hoping to send?
Well, there's a lot of different things we want to achieve. I'm not one of the organizers. I'm literally a participant. I'm here recruiting for no reason at all, except I hope more people come and advocate like I'm advocating for this. But the farm bill, the Supreme Court case, we have less control over, although we want them to know we're paying attention. But that farm bill that they're trying to shove through with almost no debate, they've recalled the House to vote on it with almost no debate at all. Right. The Democrats are letting the Republicans hang themselves on this. They didn't even show up to the hearings because they said, well, if they're going to pass it, let them pay the price for it. That's good strategy because America doesn't want this. Well, that farm bill is also a Trojan horse for the erosion of states' rights. There are four different provisions in that farm bill that take away states' rights to regulate their water. The pesticides that enter their water, the pesticides that touch their food supply, how much toxicity is allowed to be sprayed near schools, near farmland that's fertile, near agricultural preservation land. You know, if your state doesn't want to regulate pesticides, you should have that right. But if your state does want to regulate pesticide use, you should have that right. Our country is built on states' rights. That is a very essential ideal to the foundations of America, right? And this bill undermines that and would actually negate dozens of state laws across the United States that are protecting children from pesticides right now. And if you look, Hawaii right now is a great example. Okay. Hawaii, they grow a lot of tropical fruit, which draws a lot of insects. So they use massive amounts of pesticides and they just had flash floods. People just tested the water that washed down from the plantations where they're doing bananas and pineapples. And they have like 1,000 times the legal limit of toxicity in this water that came down the mountains. If that state wants to make a change, they should have that right.
Yeah.
If their citizens want to make that change, the federal government shouldn't be allowed to supersede states' rights. That's inappropriate. It's wrong. And we shouldn't be able to unring or undo laws that have already been passed in the United States by states that want to protect, that their citizens want to protect their kids from this toxicity, while simultaneously making sure the companies that are creating the toxicity aren't held accountable. It's shameful. It's against the interests of the American public. It's bad for our children. And we want to make sure everybody's paying attention. They're learning from it. We want them to learn from these speakers. And then we want them to pick up the phone. We want them calling over to the House of Representatives all day saying, vote no on this disgusting farm bill that was funded by international monopolists to allow the death of American farmers, the poisoning of American children, the starving of American children, if you look at some of the provisions, so that they can retransfer money that they're making cuts with to billionaires instead of serving the farmers it's meant to protect. This is the first farm bill in U.S. history that was not bipartisan. It was drafted down partisan lines, which means every single bit of harm that comes from it will hang directly around Republican necks. That shouldn't be the case. Farmers feed this nation.
Yeah, I did not know about that. And again, it just seems like another one of these things where, you know, what is the upside? You know, I talk about this with like Alison Spanberger because she got in and passed all this crazy stuff. And I would always be like, what even is the argument for like not requiring rapists to pay bail? Like, who is that benefiting? The rapist? Like, why are we doing that? I feel the same way about this. It's like, yeah, we're helping the rapist here. We're helping Monsanto. We're helping the biggest, most deadly, and not even just they're big, so they're bad. You know, people get mad at companies just because they're perceived as greedy because they're so successful. But no, these people have killed hundreds of thousands of Americans. Like, it's not even debatable. It's right here. Roundup has been implicated in over 180,000 cancer lawsuits since 2018. That's 8 years. 180,000 cancer lawsuits. No wonder they want immunity. They're going to go bankrupt if all these lawsuits go through. So, yeah, it's just one of these instances where it's like, of course, they're going to try to pass it quietly, you know, while everybody's distracted, because there is no argument for this. There's no argument for how this would ever help the American people. And here's another stat for you if you want to throw up. Glyphosate has been found in 60% of food in America. 60% food we eat has glyphosate at the time that we eat it. No wonder everybody's weak and stupid these days. I mean, this is the real chemical attack.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And one of the things that people don't realize is farmers don't want to use these products. There are hundreds of thousands of family farms in this country that don't want to use these products, that would love to use regenerative farming and organic farming. And we could make farm bills that support those efforts. If we're going to give subsidies to farmers to help them, for the record, farmers wouldn't need these subsidies if we hadn't allowed blatant, horrifying monopolization in their industry. The entire agricultural industry is managed by eight companies, whether it's the two companies that sell tractors, the three companies that do meat packing, the two companies that sell chemical pesticides and herbicides, or the two companies that sell seeds. The entire agricultural industry is governed by eight monopolies, all of them owned by international billionaires. These used to be diversified, competition-rich markets that were run by Americans. And our country has hurt every farmer in America by letting eight groups control every dollar that goes into farming. So they know exactly what's going to be paid for every bushel of soybeans at the beginning of the year. And they conspire and collaborate through their cartel practices to make sure that farmers never actually turn a profit without the subsidies, because they know exactly what they're going to get paid because they set the price. They know exactly what they're going to get charged to cut and pack the meat because they're the only ones they're allowed to do it with, because they keep manipulating all of the lawmaking in the states to make it so you can't use anyone but them. They keep putting out of business all of the competition they have. And our FTC and our DOJ don't enforce antitrust laws. And as a result, the only way American farmers get to survive is on subsidies and farm bills if we want to keep feeding this nation. The problem is that these same monopolies then turn around and they put the billions of dollars, the hundreds of billions of dollars of subsidies in these farm bills are tied to subsidies, saying that they can only get the money as farmers if they turn around and spend it with the monopolies on products they don't want to use. We could just as easily give these subsidies to go back to regenerative and organic farming, which we had a path to do just a few months ago. But instead, we're going to make it so they have to use an herbicide called glyphosate to save themselves 3 days drying wheat. That's what we get, a 3-day benefit. For drying wheat as a desiccant, we get a 3-day benefit for using glyphosate. And they force them to do it because it's the only way they get the subsidies to keep their farms alive. It is horrifying. These are all problems of the government's making. They have not defended agriculture. They have not defended the people that feed this nation. They have not defended the heartland of America for far too long. And they have allowed billionaires to set our policy, to buy our politicians, to do it from overseas in a place where they don't actually participate in the American economy unless they're strip mining it. And now they're going to do it again. I mean, one of the things in this bill, the farm bill, is to lock in $187 billion in cuts to SNAP food programs, which you and I have talked about a few times. They're going to cut $187 billion in SNAP, not to save us money, not to eliminate fraud, but they're going to reroute $200 billion to the same monopolies I was just talking about in subsidies. Yeah. That's what they're doing. They're going to not feed kids in the military because 21% of all military families are on SNAP, right? 23% of all teachers' families are on SNAP. Most of our retired veterans are on SNAP. And we're going to take that money away from them in blanket cuts, not strategic, and we're going to give it to billionaires.
Yep.
This is what we do. This is just what we do now. And it is horrifying, and we have to stop it, and we have to say no on this farm bill.
I'll tell you, you're hurting my neck, Tiffany, because I'm just nodding along everything you're saying. I mean, that was so powerful, and you're exactly right about everything that you're saying. You're gonna stay with us, right? You're here with us for the whole hour?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So we're going to be back on the other side. We're going to keep talking about this. We're going to talk about the farm bill. We're going to talk about what's going on with Amazon and some more about private equity, which is, you know, really your wheelhouse, and there's always insanity going on there. Just once again, got to remind people, April 27th, that's this Monday, the Supreme Court will hear Monsanto versus Durnell to decide whether the maker of Roundup can escape lawsuits from people who say it caused their cancer. And from 2018 until now, there have been 180,000 cases of this. And they're trying to put a stop to all of it so they can poison you and never pay the cost and never suffer the consequences. Don't let them get away with it. Go rally this Monday, 9 a.m., the Supreme Court.
The great folks at Binkley, our main sponsor, they fund like 90% of the operation. They give away an amazing American-made vehicle, super truck, you name it, every month. And there's a crossover period at the end of each month where you have the old offer and the new offer for 1 week together, where when you buy any product at thealexwithsword.com, you get put in to win both. And in that last week, it's always was 50x entries, 100 times. And most people that win do it during this period. I think basically everybody. And so you get the Ford Raptor Custom H1 Hummer. These are incredible. Plus $20,000 cash. You can win one or both for each dollar spent, 100K entries in the sweepstakes. Also, flash offer today. These sales are totally insane. We're giving you $10 free just to check out automatic. $10 comes off on anything at thealexjonesstore.com. It could be bovine colostrum, could be Shilajit, could be methylene blue, methylene red, could be anything. And that offer ends. That runs till Monday. That flash sale runs for 3 days. And then we have the five new modern but updated World War II trench daggers with the skull crushers all murdered out. Brass knuckles, 10-inch, double-edged, razor-sharp, stainless steel. And they made five designs. I only designed one with the Christ is King on one side and the Jerusalem cross on the other. I thought that was not... I said yesterday, I said, I don't think this is the best design. This is my design. These others are so amazing. Well, turns out that most of the sales for that is going to sell out today. So my design's most popular. See, it's just, people ask what my marketing plan is. Whatever I think's cool, it's just weird. I didn't even say this is the cool one. Get it. The audience is just like me. Oh, we want that. It's like, that's what I like is what I promote. And you seem to like it too. So that's just how it works. So we just launched five new trench war daggers. I thought they would probably sell out in a few days. They are. They'll be sold out by Monday. You are the InfoWar, Molon Labe, Liberty or Death, Don't Tread on Me, and Christ is King with the Jerusalem cross. But I think that that'll be gone. But these are limited edition. Well, they told me they had 1,000 of each knife. They have like 700 of each knife. So they will only produce 300 more of each because it is limited edition. So they're going to... It'll be sold out by Monday. Another 300 will come in of each, and then that's it. Then we'll have new designs. But these are all limited edition as well, laser etched. So you talk about bad. I personally like the Spartan one. With the Spartan phalanx and the Molon Labe, personally, I think that's the coolest art there. But again, my design, Jesus is King, is the best seller. Also, we have other sales going on. April 30th is your last chance to get original InfoWars t-shirts, products, with the original logo, all that. That's a limited edition there. By a miracle, we might beat him and take it back, you know, in the near future, but this is probably your last chance. And it's all a fundraiser, so thank you so much for your support. But I'm telling you, what you really want to get is the methylene blue and the Irish sea moss and the Shilajit and all that. I mean, it'll just change your life. The iodine's incredible. I mean, folks, we only sell stuff that works. Why would I sell something that doesn't work? The left always, he sells boner pills. What are you even talking about? I mean, yes, technically, if you take our ultimate life force, it's very similar to our nitric boost, but it has even more stuff in it. It's a spike protein detoxer. And yes, for men, it has the effect of some interesting things that, you know, when you wake up in the morning. But that's not the main function. It's for your cardiovascular system. But obviously, if the Johnson's doing good, that shows you the rest of you's doing good. The point is that everybody should take at least two rounds of this a year just for spike protein detox. But what it does for your cardiovascular system is insane. And this is not a bestseller. I'm just up for saying, this is what you want from callers.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the War Room for this week, and I do want to remind you that this is your final week to be entered to win both the Ford Raptor and or the custom H1 Hummer plus $20,000 in cash. Every dollar you spend at thealexjonesstore.com gets you 100 entries to win either or both of these cars, and that's just on top of $10 discount. You get anything you buy at the store, you're getting $10 off, courtesy of thealexjonesstore.com. We've got five new trench war daggers. Collect them all or find your personal favorite, and they are on massive discount. They'd be well worth it, and people would be happy to pay $200 for these knives. But you can get them for $79.99. For a VIP, you're paying just $63.99. Plus, if you're a VIP, you're getting an extra $10 and the $10 on top of that. We're practically giving these things away, folks. And if you get two daggers, you get an extra 25% off your second one. April 30th will be your last chance ever to get InfoWars official merchandise. So go now, All InfoWars merchandise is 20% off. You keep us on the air, and you get yourself a little piece of history that will soon be a collector's item, since we will no longer be able to sell anything with the InfoWars logo after the 30th of this month. So go now, thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, if you want to let them know who sent you. With that, very happy to get back to my guest, Tiffany Cianci. Follow her on X at TheVinoMom. TiffanyCianci.com is her website. Of course, she's participating in, not hosting, but she'll be there on Monday, the 27th, to protest outside of the Supreme Court over the Roundup case to let the Supreme Court and our elected representatives know we are not happy with the fact that they may very well soon be immune to suffering the appropriate consequences for giving everybody cancer. So very important that we encourage people to go out to that on Monday. But we're shifting topics a little bit here to Amazon, you know, our favorite company in the world, Mordor Reborn. Emails show Amazon colluding with other firms to raise prices. California releases evidence of alleged Amazon price fixing scheme. What's this about, Tiffany?
So one of the things that we've talked about a lot when I come on your show is that the Trump administration has absolutely just not served the American people when it comes to antitrust. And this isn't just a Trump administration problem, right? It was happening in Trump's first term. It was happening during the Obama terms. We have antitrust laws in America, and when they were made after the 1920s crash, right? When the Sherman Antitrust Act was written, when all of the small antitrust acts were written, they were written in a way that made them the only set of laws in America that were considered so essential to the viability of our republic's long-term health that we as individuals are allowed to enforce them without the public office to help us. Huh. So like if somebody goes and steals a car, I can't prosecute them. Right. I can sue them civilly, but I can't prosecute them. I need a prosecutor to do that. The government has to do that. Antitrust laws are the only laws in the U.S. where citizens are allowed to prosecute them because they were considered that important. And over the last 30 years, really since Citizens United, we have seen the steady erosion of antitrust enforcement in this country. And we've seen in the Trump term right now, all of the good work that Lina Khan was doing. She was the best FTC chairperson we've had in decades. She took it very seriously, but you need multiple terms to actually get antitrust cases going. The discovery alone can drag them out for 8-10 years.
Right.
And with those cases, you can break up monopolies. We stopped breaking up monopolies. We haven't broken up a monopoly in 40 years.
Right.
Right. And right now, we're seeing all of these antitrust cases just fall apart. And one of the things that antitrust is supposed to do is prosecute cartel-like price fixing schemes. Price fixing is illegal. Not just in the states, not just in the federal government, everywhere in America, price fixing is illegal. We have several laws that deal with it. In this instance, Amazon was doing what we know they're doing. They were getting together with large distributors and saying, hey, we're not going to carry your products anymore because we think that the price needs to be higher. Hmm. And you're selling them too cheaply. We want the price to go up. We don't want you to sell them to us for more money. We want to sell them for more money. We want a higher profit margin. And they said, okay, charge whatever you want. And they said, no. We want all of the places that sell your products to raise their prices at the same time as us.
Right.
And so they went to these companies and told them that they would only keep their products in their stores online if they gave required pricing to all of their distributors.
Right.
So as an example, there were like pet food supplements they wanted to charge more for. They wanted a higher profit margin. People were making money. They had a good profit margin. And Amazon said, no, we can charge more, probably because the entire veterinary industry has been monopolized. So they can charge whatever they want.
Yeah.
And they said, Chewy, we want you to raise your prices too. And they said, well, you're going to do it with us. And they said, let's raise them at the exact same time, the exact same amount. Now, it wasn't just Chewy. It was happening across a litany of thousands of products. But they were strategically working together not to respond to inflation. We all know it's not inflation. This is greedflation.
Yep.
This is systematically choosing to charge the American people more. And because they're controlling the entire market through monopoly, there's no competition to undercut them. And we have nowhere else to choose.
Yeah. So let me read this. This is from the LA Times. This is their story about this. California releases evidence of alleged Amazon price fixing scheme. So like what you're pointing out, not only does Amazon already have almost a de facto monopolization of, like, certainly online retailers. They're collaborating with places like Walmart and brick and mortar stores to guarantee, because basically Amazon has to be competitive with them. And so they don't want to have a higher price than Walmart. So they, you know, reach out to make sure everybody's higher price. So this is what it says. Amazon wanted to sell Levi's Easy Khaki Classic Pants for $29.99, but Walmart had lowered the price and the giant online retailer had matched it at $25 to $26. But Amazon wasn't happy. It subsequently contacted Levi Strauss, asking the San Francisco apparel company to convince Walmart to raise its price, according to a document filed Monday in a price fixing case brought against Amazon by California Attorney General Rob Bonta. Not only did Walmart raise its price, but a Levi Strauss employee also emailed Amazon saying, quote, "I'm really hoping we can show this as a proof case so we can resolve issues going forward." So, yeah, they wanted to, you know, have this as a precedent set that they could do over and over. And as much as I don't really like the term greedflation, because I feel like it came about while inflation was really big, because the Biden administration just wanted people to blame the corporations and not the government. But that's what this is. I mean, this is greed. This is a upping of the price, not based on market reality, not based off of geopolitical situation, but based off of greed. They have an algorithm where they can see the maximum amount they can charge, and they want to get up to that maximum. So while I normally wouldn't use that phrase, I think greedflation is exactly what we're looking at here, as well as obviously the monopolization and the cartel-like behavior. I think you're exactly right.
And I want to explain to you why I use the word greedflation, because it's a word that I used to think was probably not accurate in the way I describe things. During COVID, it was the first time in American history, it was during the Biden administration, which started in the Trump administration, right, when we shut down all those small businesses.
Yep.
And allowed the most effective consolidation and elimination of competition in American history.
Yep.
And what happened was a very important shift happened during 2022 and 2023. Historically, going all the way back to when they started tracking it in 1900, of every dollar that a product price went up that they attributed to inflation, historically only 6 cents went to corporate profit. That has statistically always been the case, that the company would take a haircut to try to make sure it wasn't too hard on the American people, to try to make sure they wouldn't have to make too many cuts, to make sure that people could still keep buying their products. So they would make 6 cents in profit, but the whole dollar wasn't profit.
Right.
2022 to 2023, that shifted to 94 cents.
Whoa.
I don't know how you call that anything but greedflation.
Right.
We saw an inversion that only 6 cents was necessity and 94 cents was profit. How's that anything else? And this was across hundreds of industries, right, in the research studies that went into this. And when you look at that and you think about the fact that if we had not allowed this mass consolidation, these monopolies to be formed, that wouldn't have been an issue. Yeah. But we have nowhere else to shop. They've so effectively consolidated every industry in the country, right? We have 6 companies that own the entire world. We have no choices. And as a result of that, they can charge us whatever they want. And we have nowhere else to go. We think we're shopping around online, but we're shopping with BlackRock Series A shares versus BlackRock Series C shares.
Yep.
They're still all owned by BlackRock. And that's what we're dealing with.
That's exactly right. And I know we want to get into some private equity stuff here, but just as you're talking, and you might not even have anything to say about this, but I'm just wondering how all of this monopolization, because obviously what we saw under COVID was very well managed, well organized. I mean, it was the largest transfer of wealth from the middle class to the top 1% the world has ever seen. Trillions of dollars ripped out of our hands and put into their coffers. We all saw it. And it was on purpose. And now I see with the looming specter of like energy lockdowns and the Iran war cutting off fertilizer, I see everything falling into place again for another round of this type of consolidation. Just quickly, have you noticed anything like that? Are you seeing any signs that show that they're gearing up for another round of buying up these small businesses like they did last time?
I mean, pesticide immunity is a good example, but we're talking about immunity across a litany of different industries, because you and I are also about to talk about granting immunity to the fund managers that are going to steal your 401k and bail out billionaires with it. right? We're seeing it in real time. And there's not really a lot left to consolidate. I'm going to be very honest with you. There is very little competition left in almost any industry in the United States. Almost everything is run by the same handful of corporations, and people serve on 24 boards, but they're all supposedly competing with one another. Our antitrust regulators don't do their jobs, and our members of Congress don't do enough to force the proper updates to the antitrust laws that we need. Right? We just saw it. The Trump administration just secretly had their attorney general show up the morning of the Live Nation antitrust trial to break up Live Nation on behalf of the Swifties. And he walked in. The prosecutor for the DOJ was at the table ready to proceed. And no one told him that somebody just a little higher than him had settled with Live Nation for a couple hundred million the night before.
Right. Right.
Well, guess what? The states kept going with it and they won their case, which means that the government would have won their case. They just didn't want to. Why? Because Live Nation spent tens of millions of dollars to make sure it wouldn't happen. That was a cost of doing business, baby, to keep their monopoly. And because the feds weren't involved, it won't be broken up now. The states can't break them up. Only the feds can.
Right.
They can
right.
penalize them a whole bunch, but they can't break them up.
Wow. Yeah. And of course, we talked about that because we last time we talked, it was right before that happened. And we were both saying, like some of these other cases, that would be another just bombshell home run, knock it out of the park win for the Trump administration. They could point to all the young people in America and say, hey, we just saved you buckets of money. Go out and see live shows. Enjoy yourself on us. You're welcome, Donald J. Trump. I mean, that could have been a bombshell for Trump, which, again, it's like he just didn't want to. I get it. They just didn't want to. They had better priorities. It's absurd.
I mean, I feel like this I'm going to say the very unpopular thing right now. He's made $6 billion in a year. Harrison, the lame duck here is not working for anything at this point.
Yeah.
In my opinion, if there's money attached to it, he's just, I can't, I don't have a way to defend anything.
Yeah.
I just don't.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't either. And I'm done trying to figure out if there's some sort of angle I'm missing on this. I don't think I'm missing any angles. Now, I think it's actually pretty clear cut. They're working on the side of the corporations that are rapaciously, you know, desperate to steal as much as they possibly can. So, yeah, it sucks, but that's just where we are. And, you know, it's time we had some bipartisan opposition to the way that we're being raked over the coals like this. So getting into private equity, I mean, every time we talk and every time I open up the internet, it seems like they've moved on to some new horrible thing that's going to ruin the world for everybody. And I imagine today's no different. Tiffany, what do you have for us in the private equity realm?
Okay, so we're going to talk private equity and we're going to talk private credit simultaneously. They're deeply intertwined and both of them are tied to Trump's executive order from a few months ago. So we came on your show trying to stop that executive order. This is the executive order that grants 401ks, supposedly it was pitched as democratizing investment for the average investor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that it was delivered to the American people. What that executive order actually did was it really didn't change anything. You could always invest your 401k in private equity. You could always invest your 401k in private credit. You could always invest it in crypto. The only reason that your fund manager would refuse to do it is because you could sue them if they lost your money because it was considered such a scary investment. So you could sue them. So what the executive order actually did was command the Department of Labor and the SEC to write new rules that would make it so that they got immunity from your ability to sue them when they lose all your money, strip mining you to hand it over as a bailout to these billionaires that are literally, their bubble is popping in real time right now. And that's why when I come on here, I talk about this. Well, when he issued the executive order, he gave them 4 months to make the new rulemaking process to give this immunity to these fund managers so that you can't protect your assets anymore. And that rulemaking process has begun. And we need to step in right now. We need to stop it.
Okay. So what do we need to stop about it exactly? And this is this concerning both the private credit and the private equity, or is this just private equity in this point?
So the executive order was very specific. It said private equity, private credit, and crypto. Okay, so it's all three. They're intertwined. All right, and they're all considered too risky. But the private equity and private credit both come with that 2-in-20 model you and I've talked about, where no matter how much you invest, you will never make more money than you could in standard investments. It will just strip mine your wealth away and give it to billionaires. It will reduce the value of what you would have made no matter how well it performs, because the fee management structure at anything less than $10 million will always cost you more than the benefit you would have had, right? And so you could sue under the old rules And you would say, you invested my, you knew the fees. You knew I wouldn't make as much money. You invested it anyway, or you had a conflict of interest, or you got a handout or a kickback, or you got some crazy commission and invested my money. I'm suing you. It fell under a type of laws called ERISA laws, E-R-I-S-A. ERISA laws happened the first several times that fund managers tried to invest 401ks and lost them in private equity. And those class action ERISA laws are what have kept 401ks safe from private equity until now. So Trump is trying to grant immunity, just like in Bear Monsanto, to these big corporations so that they can invest their money to shore up their now underperforming private equity portfolios and private credit portfolios with American 401k money. And 401ks won't know they've lost their money for a decade, wow, right? Till they're about ready to retire and realize they've lost everything. And you won't be able to sue because of these new rules. So every time that an American regulator or regulatory agency wants to pass a new rule, it has to go through a rulemaking process. And most people don't know about that. And that's because companies have paid to make it intentionally difficult to navigate. But during any rulemaking process, Americans are allowed to give public comment for 60 days. Well, right now we have two public comment periods that just opened about these laws. Okay, first we have the SEC and the CFTC. Now, if you're not familiar with those, most people know what the Securities Exchange Commission is. That's the SEC. But the CFTC is the Commodities Futures Trading, right? They just got together and issued a joint recommendation that private credit managers no longer have to engage in any reporting at $150 million, which is what it used to be. You and I talked about this,
yep,
right? That used to be considered a large investment.
Right.
Was $150 million in assets under management. Their new proposed rule increases that to $1 billion. This also has implications for the housing investments, because remember, it's only large investors that are going to be locked out. The small investors, they can keep buying houses.
Right.
They can keep buying them. Well, this changes that definition from small investors at under 150 million in assets and large investors over 150 million. To be a large investor now, you have to have $1 billion in assets under management.
Wow.
And so as a result, if this rule goes through, we will have less oversight than we already have in what is an almost entirely opaque process. Simultaneously, at the Department of Labor, we have a rulemaking process that has just opened that is calling for public comment, and we only have 60 days. So on both of these rules, we have until June 1st, okay? And over at the Department of Labor, their proposed rule is to make it unlawful for class action lawsuits to be formed under the ERISA lawsuit standard if your fund manager has done moderate due diligence in investing where they were going to put your money, which means they read a prospectus and they said, this looks good to me, and they invest your money. If they did moderate diligence, even if they knew the funds, like the fees were going to be too high, even if they knew that there was a likelihood of risk, even if they took a kickback, even if their personal investments are in there, even if they got taken on a whirlwind trip for a cruise to go talk about it on the water where there's no laws in international waters, if they did moderate due diligence, we can no longer sue them. They have immunity. So these two rulemaking processes allow us to give public comment. And the last time that I called on my audience to get loud in these rulemaking processes, we got a rule passed that protected small businesses from retaliation by private equity firms. And it happened. We did that. In 3 days, we got 5,500 comments put through.
Wow.
And we made that rulemaking process reality. Nobody had even responded until we drew attention to it, because most often, because of the way it's been lobbied for, these rulemaking processes are buried 20 links deep and no one can find them.
Right.
Well, I am telling you guys that your voice matters, and we need to flood these comment periods, because there has to be a nonpartisan analysis of what the American public asks for in the comments before they're allowed to pass these rules. And I am screaming, I am begging, I am pleading for every American in the United States. We need to demand that these rules not pass. We do not give immunity to people that poorly invest your 401k to bail out billionaires at these private equity and private credit firms that have made bad investments, that have over leveraged these investments with debt, that can't move these balances off their balance sheets. We need to stop it. Those ERISA laws were put there to keep your investment safe, and they have done so for decades. Yep. It took decades of lobbying and then one very large check to get this done.
Mm.
And we have to stop it. And you guys need to be loud. Everyone watching this show, In addition to, I know I tell you guys always, email your fund manager. Tell them you do not authorize investments in private equity, private credit, or crypto with your funds, that you're removing any permission to do that. Simultaneously, we're going to go and we are going to call on the American people to take part in this rulemaking process. Drop your public comments in. We need to flood it, because I promise you, the lobby groups for these industries are paying huge money to have massive bot farms go in and do the same thing in the other direction.
Yep. Absolutely.
We've got to break through those firewalls and be louder than them.
Yeah, and look, you know, nobody likes frivolous lawsuits. Obviously, the yep. you know, legal process can be abused these days, but the threat of a lawsuit is a control mechanism that stops these people from taking risks. They have to know that if they make a bad decision, it's going to come down on their head. You remove that, there's no other process. There's nothing else limiting their behavior. The lawsuits are the only thing that they have to worry about. It's the only thing that we can do at this point. If that gets taken away, there's nothing else. So we got 2 minutes here. Walk us through. How do people leave comments? Where do they go? And what should they say?
So I'm going to go post the comment links underneath this link, but I know you guys reuse this hour all weekend, so I'll get you guys the links. What you're going to do is you're going to go to the two different links and you're going to go into add public comment and say, I do not support this rulemaking process. As an American citizen, I want my 401k protected. I don't believe in immunity for billionaires. I don't believe in immunity for these big Wall Street fund managers. I do not support this. Simultaneously, we do not support increasing the reporting threshold for these very high value hedge fund and private equity fund managers. We do not support increasing the reporting threshold from $150 million to $1 billion. I want to stress that means that until a private equity firm has $1 billion, not just that they control, but that they're openly controlling, they can hide it.
Right.
Until they openly control $1 billion, the government's not allowed to ask them any questions.
Yeah.
Even if your 401ks are being used.
Yeah. And again, we talked about this last time, but just so people understand, like when Trump said, I'm going to stop big private equity from buying up houses, that's the caveat. That's the little star. Private equity can still buy up houses. It's just they have to be under $1 billion. So it's insane. Like, yes, obviously people with $150 million, I would consider that fairly large, but the law doesn't. So SEC, yeah. FTC, you got to call out and oppose what they're trying to do here. So I love this because, Tiffany, you're always coming and, you know, we joke that you're the bubbly fairy of doom. But like what you're bringing here today are two very pertinent and really easy calls to action. If you're in D.C., go protest in front of the Supreme Court against the immunity for glyphosate. That's on Monday, the 27th of April in Washington, D.C., outside of the Supreme Court. And then here, this is even easier. This is like nothing. This will take you 2 minutes. Click on your phone. Easy as pie, but it'll be very effective. There's no reason not to do this. Go comment. They're open for public comment. We have a few days to do it. Go now. Find Tiffany Cianci on X, and she'll post the links there. I will repost them. Follow Tiffany on X at The Vino Mom, TheVinoMom, and her website, TiffanyCianci.com. Incredible stuff, as always, Tiffany. This is just great, and I'm so glad there are people like you organizing this and helping to push back, because we have to realize that we have the power to change things. We do not have to be subject to this stuff.
I'll see you Monday from the People versus Poison rally, everybody.
I can't wait. I'll be watching the live stream and there with you in spirit. Tiffany Cianci, thank you so much for being with us. Absolutely incredible stuff. That's going to be it for us, folks. We'll see you on Monday for the final week of InfoWars War Room broadcast. It's the end of an age. Go to thealexjonesstore.com to make sure the next age is even better.
Coming up in just the next month or so, it looks like this is finally it. They're finally going to be able to shut down InfoWars, but they won't shut you down as InfoWarriors. And that term and that name lives forever. The InfoWar lives forever. In the potential twilight of InfoWars itself as InfoWars.com, we've launched a limited edition line of the InfoWars 1776 limited edition line. A whole bunch of new shirts, a whole bunch of new hats that are limited edition, that take a lot of the classic InfoWars shirts, this is the all-time bestseller, navy blue with red InfoWars on it, and adding on the shoulder 1776. These are historic shirts, and they're symbols of your support and your being part of this operation and helping the operation grow and expand into the future. This is personally one of my favorite shirts in the new line. Now here's the classic InfoWars logo on a white shirt. Never done black on white. Seems like we should have. Looks great. Got the 1776 on the shoulder. You are literally funding and supporting and wearing your uniform
in the fight to defeat the globalists. InfoWars is 28 years old. America is 250. And look at the back of this clean shirt. USA 250, 1776 forever. Semi-quintennial, that means 250, baby. America's birthday with badass hats as well. And then, of course, we've got the new limited edition, America at 250 years old. And the back of these shirts are amazing Americana. And I designed this, the Betsy Ross flag with 250 on it. Get yours now, thealexhillstore.com. I'm back because I forgot one point I want to be very clear about. This is a fundraiser. We need funds to continue on and the new operation. It's urgent. These are historic shirts. You've taken the InfoWar this far. Please take action now. For those of you who have been on the fence over bought anything, thealexhillstore.com, but have shared links and things, I appreciate you. But come on, folks. We're the tip of the spear. We need you. We need your support. You're the tip of the spear. Thank you so much.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.